Lander separation commanded. Altitude 600 meters. Gravity turn. Altitude 400 meters. 300 meters. 200 meters. 80 meters. 60 meters. 50 meters. Constant velocity. 37 meters. 30 meters. 20 meters. 17 meters. Standing by for touchdown. Touchdown confirmed.
Oh, that's pretty good right there.
The scientists erupting in cheers and hugs and the high fives.
I like it anytime you get a scientist excited about something.
I know, I was like, this is really big. I just have to understand why.
Yeah, when scientists start applauding and jumping up and down, you know something big has happened. Something that really does affect our lives. All right, time is for booking. Thank you so much for being with us. NASA Associate Administrator for Science Mission Directorate, in other words, Director of Missions at NASA, is joining us. Congratulations to you and the entire team at NASA and JPL and everybody who put this together. We landed successfully on Mars today with this particular spacecraft that, and we'll get to the details of that in just a second, but here's the thing that is not being reported, which is probably more significant than even this mission, which is these cube satellites that were part of this mission that were sent to fly over Mars simultaneous to this landing and send back data as quickly as we have ever gotten it back from Mars, right?
That's right. So thanks so much for the congratulations. And just on behalf of the team, thanks for your interest and your excitement. I mean, we couldn't be more elated. And you're exactly right. So you know, history has been made not only with the landing, but how we use those suitcase big, you know, satellites that are out there. They're kind of small, they're cheap as compared to other missions, and they're out there. And I have to tell you, I walked around yesterday on the campus here at JPL and asked people, who wants to bet $50 that this thing will work perfectly? With both spacecraft working, I couldn't find one.
You couldn't find anybody to take
them? Nobody wanted to bet. And they worked. They worked so perfectly. Actually, at the end, there's not a single data frame that was dropped. So you couldn't build a more perfect satellite than both of them. And between us, during the last 24 hours, we lost one of these satellites for 6 hours. We couldn't figure out what was wrong with it. Another one had another issue. I mean, these satellites really delivered on their promise, and history was made with these novel platforms that, frankly, we're going to want to learn more about.
So the idea here, though, is that they were able to send back transmission from that distance faster, more efficiently than has ever been done before. And that's one of the issues with a Mars mission, is that the data transmission, there's going to be a significant lag, or there has traditionally been a significant lag between the spacecraft itself and then communications on Earth.
Exactly right. So what these satellites were doing is nothing else than basically a bent pipe communication system. So in other words, they listen to the lander going down and immediately send it back to Earth. So all they did is they listened and just repeated it loud back to Earth on another frequency band. And so because of that, we immediately knew. I mean, we had the first image within couple minutes of the touchdown. We knew directly, and we had the status of all the subsystems from these little guys piping it back. Otherwise, we would have had to wait for hours to get the very information back. And of course, at 6 o'clock tonight, we'll get the next satellite over it, one of the assets that's in orbit around Mars already, and we're going to get more information back. But we got them within seconds and minutes because of these small spacecraft.
So incredible! So it's going to be sending more and more data back. What are scientists going to be looking for that's going to make changes in what we understand about the planet, or what will you be looking for?
So this is the first look on the inside of Mars. If you want, the robotic geologist, right? That's what we just landed. So we will see for the first time on the inside of Mars. And frankly, it's a question full of puzzles, what the inside of Mars is about. You know, consider the Earth. You know, we have a core, we have a mantle, we have earthquakes, we have, you know, all kinds of, we have continental plates, right? And so we don't have some of these things. Yes, we have a core on Mars, we have we don't have plates, we don't think. We have volcanic activity. We don't know whether we have Mars quakes. But well, this seismology instrument will be the first to really teach us about the inside of Mars. Now, what's interesting about this, frankly, by doing so, it will teach us about the history of Mars and the Earth in a way we can't learn from the Earth alone. Mars and the Earth came to be together. They're both terrestrial planets. And much of the history of Earth, the ancient history over 3 billion years ago, is all erased from the surface of Earth because of the things I just said, erosion and continental plates and now all this recirculation. All this stuff is still there, and we're going to learn about the history of Mars and the Earth for the first time, looking at the inside of this of our neighbor.
Okay. So you're doing that with really sensitive equipment on board, but there's also a probe that's going to go into the dirt of Mars. It's 6 feet, something like that. Is that correct? And it's going to be looking at, because the other items that we put up there weren't able to get, and the 6 feet doesn't seem like a very deep, but when you're landing something on the surface of another planet, it's very hard to get, you know, they were using shovels and other kinds of things on board these other probes. But this is going to actually go down, and it's going to check the temperature variation at 6 feet underneath the surface of the dirt of Mars, which will tell us it's important for what reason, Doctor?
So basically by doing these measurements, so it's a probe that is basically hammering down up to 16 feet below the surface. By the way, we've never done that, right? So we've never made put a probe down that much. So basically by doing that and by making measurements of you know, heating up, really measuring the thermal conductivity, the kind of the characteristics of this, you know, this surface, we're actually going to learn about its history and its make, right? So really by doing these measurements together with the seismology is really a way for us to understand how the make and the characteristics of the outermost layers of Mars in a way we've never measured before.
In terms of making what this mission does, and again, you're going to see this on the news tonight. This is a big deal. I think a lot of Americans didn't realize that this was going on until yesterday. And it was very smart how NASA put this out. These 7 minutes of terror that were about to occur on Mars.
But it looked like it. If you saw the men and women in Mission Control there in Pasadena, if you looked at their faces, you could see the tension as they waited for these 7 minutes for it to, enter the Mars atmosphere and then slow down at this dramatic pace.
From 12,000 miles an hour down to, you know, to 5 miles an hour, so we could land using a combination of parachutes and also these retrojets. It's really when you stop and you look at the science of you know what we're doing here,
incredible.
And we're only 110 years away from the first man taking off from Earth, right? With the Wright brothers.
Yeah.
I mean, so when you think about how far we've come. It is in this short period of human history. It's really an amazing thing. But how does this mission? What does this mission add to the eventual goal of getting to Mars with humans?
To us, so first of all, I just want to echo what you said. It is feeling exactly like the 7 minutes of terror. That's exactly the right word. That's how it feels when you're there. Because, you know, if it's not working, your life's going to change, right? Decades of investments are going to be eradicated without any benefit, you know, if it's not working. So, and remember, we're the only country who can do that. There's never been another country in the history of humanity that's landed on Mars, and so successfully. There's many people who have tried. So if you looked at this, kind of over every attempt, about 40% or so have been successful, and we just upped that rate to date. So basically, for us, what we want to do is exactly what you said, is we want to go there with humans. I want to go take humans out of low Earth orbit, get towards the moon, and then eventually to Mars. And what we're learning, before we want to go to Mars, we want to know the entire environment. You know, are there hazards that we should be aware of, like Mars quakes? Is there water below the surface that we can use as fuel or as food? Are there storms? Is there weather, severe weather, that could jeopardize livelihood on this planet? So this is a really important part of that overall equation of understanding this other site for humans. So that's how we think about it. It's by itself just an important part of understanding, if you want situational awareness of where we would be, where we will be with humans once we get there.
So, is it champagne? What is the over at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory? What's your standard celebratory thing that goes on there?
So the first thing that happens is that perhaps you saw that everybody was eating peanuts before. Like, all these things are in history. One time, you know, somebody after six failed missions to the moon, the Ranger missions, somebody pulled out peanuts, and from that moment on, everybody's eating peanuts, right? And now, I think the one thing that's just great to see is the humanity behind it all. You know, people hugging each other and just thanking each other. But the one thing that you realize, you know, in my program, there are over 100 missions kind of at the NASA science program. Every one of them comes to bear because of amazing teams coming together and doing this. And you know, people congratulate each other. And many of them, frankly, are super tired after the celebration. They go home because they could not sleep for a while. I talked to a number of them who told me that the entire last night they were up. Because they could not, you know, because they're worried. They think in their mind through everything that could go wrong. And trust me, I did the same last night. So it doesn't have an end.
I think, you know, you alluded to something that I think is really, really, really important here. And Tom Wolfe wrote about it in The Right Stuff. The expression was, in terms of getting federal funding or corporate funding or whatever it happens to be for these things, you better be successful. No bucks, no Buck Rogers. Right. So that was that's the point here is that when you do something like you just did, where you proved up this technology, especially the satellite technology that we just talked about at the beginning of the segment, but also this lander and the technology that you're using and also being able to come up with this really, really, really intricate seismographic technology that is now on the surface of Mars that humans made, and that the United States government, NASA, the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, and a bunch of the contractors who did this from around the world. You know, this is an ultimate human endeavor. If it were not successful, funding and development along this way would be cut off. This creates more momentum for an eventual Mars shot for humans somewhere in the 2030s, is everybody's estimation here, would be the earliest we could do that.
Right.
So at least that keeps that keeps the hope of that alive. Mm-hmm. So congratulations.
Congrats.
This is another one of those momentous days in human history.
It is.
Yeah, it truly is. And it feels that way. And I'm just so proud of the team. And you are right. Whenever we go to space, we do take risks. You know, whether it's a weather satellite that we put out there, you know, like, it has to work. But when we land on another planet like this, you know, it really feels, and it is, a leap, you know, for us. Yeah. That something that is truly at the level of humanity, really, truly historic. And then that's what we experience today.
Right. And as a rocket scientist, you must be very proud when people go, well, it's not like a rocket scientist. You go, no, I am a rocket scientist. No.
It takes a rocket scientist, but it does.
Yes.
It does, it turns out.
Right. Sometimes a rocket scientist does have to open the refrigerator, and I'll bet you that Tom does. All right, Doctor, thank you very much. Thomas Zurbuchen from, he's the Director of Missions at NASA. Appreciate it, sir.
Awesome stuff.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
All right, there he goes.
I still can't believe he got pictures back within minutes. From Mars. It was just, it's just the whole thing. Mind-boggling and incredible.
Yeah. Great piece of technology there. All right, let's check in. Speaking of great technology, here's Judy Pilak. What's happening in the newsroom at the top of the hour?
Well, President Trump telling GM to make a car that sells.
Oh, God. You know, sometimes, I'm sorry, my mic was still on. I sometimes can't believe the headlines.
I know, right? They're all real.
Yeah.
I hate to tell you.
Okay.